My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of Inside United. Today we have Gary Antion. We are very grateful to have him here again. Welcome to Inside United.
Thanks, Victor. Thanks for having me back again.
Today, Gary is going to talk to us about the early days of Ambassador College, what was on his mind, and his early years after graduation and service in the church. It was a different era, a period in history that was so idealistic and so vivid to all of us that it really fuels us old-timers that we try to pass on to others. So, Gary, I'd like you to talk about it.
Well, in 1958, I graduated from high school. And my brother David had been listening to Herbert Armstrong on the World Tomorrow program, a program that emphasized prophecy, a program that talked about this world's not the end all, there's a better world coming. And it scared me when I was a younger person. I would run downstairs. I would get up out of bed. I was already in bed. I'd get up out of bed, 10:30 at night, go downstairs. My dad was still up watching Broderick Crawford in one of the Highway Patrol or something on TV at that time. And I would sit down there and I thought I had run away from Mr. Armstrong's voice. But that voice followed me all the way downstairs. And when I was sitting downstairs with my dad, I could still hear that voice in the background. So my dad, my brother Dave, wanted to go to Ambassador College. He met a baptizing tour back at that time because he was getting interested. Had all these booklets and correspondence course and everything. And he wanted to go. My mother did not want him to go from Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh, all the way across the country to Pasadena, California. And my dad said, I think this Herbert Armstrong must be a charlatan. He must be a fake and a fraud. And okay, to try to make it easier on my brother, he said, if you want to go, write the Chamber of Commerce and ask them what they think of Herbert Armstrong and Ambassador College.
Good source.
So my brother Dave said, okay, he'd do that. My dad said, if they give a clean bill of health, you can go. Well, to my dad's surprise, they wrote back and had nothing but glowing terms about what Herbert Armstrong and Ambassador College had done for the community of Pasadena.
Wow.
And they gave him a clean bill of health, so my dad was snookered. He couldn't do anything about it. So my brother wanted to go, so they helped him get his stuff ready, and they took him to the bus station, and my brother proceeded to ride the bus for several days to Pasadena, California. Well, after he was there, my thought was, good riddance. I'm glad you're gone. So my dad said to me then, and I was about 4 years younger than my brother, he said, if I ever catch you listening to that program, I'll break your radio. So don't worry, Dad. I'm not interested in this program anyway. So I was interested in playing basketball in high school. And I was interested in a girl down the street from me and all that. And I wasn't interested in going across the country and certainly was not interested in that kind of religion. So I was going to bed about 3 weeks later. And as I went up the steps, I heard this familiar voice again. My dad was tuning in to the World Tomorrow program. Here was the I don't know if he thought my brother was going to play his clarinet as special music on the program or what, but my dad was listening to it. So I went into my bedroom and I put mine on. So after about several weeks, my dad quit listening and I kept listening. So I listened for a couple of years on and off. And my brother had left all this literature behind, and he kept writing to me and telling me how the students, his friends are asking about his brother, and wouldn't it be nice if I would come to Ambassador, and I was resisting that. So after I graduated from high school, I had a full tuition scholarship to Washington and Jefferson College to become a chemical engineer.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to live at home, go there, so it only cost me for my books. That's all I had to pay for. So I was going back and forth, and I did good, but as time went on, I was being convicted more and more.
So it kind of came gradually, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it came gradual. So then I started studying the correspondence course, and the more I studied, the more convicted I became. Then I'd started listening to the World Tomorrow program not just once a day, but twice a day. Because it was on earlier in the afternoon on WPIT Pittsburgh, a local channel, but then it was on WWVA in Wheeling, West Virginia, a super channel. So I could hear WWVA in the evening, I could hear WPIT in the afternoon. So I'd listen to both of them every day. And so I've started to get saturated with knowledge, and I've started, and what was the difference for me? Because Mr. Armstrong is I was an 18-year-old or 17-year-old. Mr. Armstrong was the grandpa to me. But what made a difference for me was truth. And I always said, I want the truth. And I would look into the Bible, and anything I read, I checked every scripture. And I did find a few mistakes, but what they were typos. Instead of a 1 Samuel 18:17, it was 1 Samuel 17:18. So just a mistake, but it wasn't a misuse of scripture.
Mm-hmm.
So I made sure I checked everything out because this was my life. I didn't want to change. I had full tuition scholarship. I had my own car. I had to drive a girlfriend down the street two houses away from me that I liked for years. And what would I do if I went to Ambassador College? What would I do if I gave all this up to follow God? And so I finally came to the place where I went and talked to my instructors because I had to go to classes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Mm.
And so I said, well, I'll see if I could get that changed. I'll change from being a chemical engineer. I was good at German. So I'll become a German teacher. That's what I'll do. And I went, talked to the academic advisor. I couldn't change it. So what am I supposed to do now? So I said, I can't go back. I promised God that at the end of this year, I will not go back. I will not trample on your Sabbath day by doing my things. And so after I promised that into my little closet, because I thought when you had to pray, you had to go into your closet.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a closet in our bedroom that full of clothes.
Right.
And stuffy because there was no air in there, no fan. And I would kneel down in there among the shoes and my nose would be in the clothes hanging in the closet. And I would pray. But I promised God that I would not, at the end of that year, I would not go. So I applied to University of Pittsburgh. Same thing. I couldn't get classes that would not be on Saturday. So then out of desperation, I applied to Ambassador College. And my brother Dave was graduating the year I came in 1959. Mm. So I was accepted. We drove across the country. My dad brought me down to a wedding. My brother Dave was getting married in Texas. So the whole family went down there. I was his best man. Herbert Armstrong did the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Garner Ted Armstrong sang at the wedding. A number of the other individuals were there in the wedding party, and I was the best man. It's my brother. So after that, I hitched a ride to California with one of the former, well, one of the current students, senior students, going back. So I was able to get a ride from there. My parents bid me goodbye. One of the saddest days of my life was to see them going east and I'm going to go west.
Mm-hmm.
And so ended up going out to college, and I came to the conclusion after being there from August till December that I needed to be baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And I was baptized by Dr. Rod Meredith and one of the senior students who actually did the baptism, but Dr. Meredith was there overseeing it and laid hands on me.
Did you spend the entire time? Of course, there was no Big Sandy, was there? That
no Big Sandy.
Okay, so it was just—
And passive. No Brickett Wood.
Okay, but you graduated from Brickett Wood.
So during my second year at college, 1960 to 1961, they started Brickett Wood, England. They found a memorial hall over there. And it was enough places there for students to lodge that they were able to start a college in England. And so that was 1961 to 62. Well, that same summer, I was sent out as a ministerial trainee to St. Louis, Missouri, and I had practical Christianity, I think it was called practical theology.
Uh-huh.
And so I had a year with a minister who had need for somebody to travel with him
mm-hmm.
because he was divorced
mm-hmm.
and he couldn't visit women alone. So he needed me with him when he went out visiting and needed me to help him be a companion, really. And so for a year, I learned a lot about just sitting and riding shotgun with an experienced minister who was like a dad to me. It was like the Apostle Paul and Timothy.
Well, I think that those of us who came out at that time. It was later, but we worked as second. We were called second men.
Yeah, second men.
Second men, and we had to be with the mentor, sometimes we couldn't say very much.
Right.
I know that sometimes if I'd say too much, I would get corrected for it afterwards because I wanted to talk. But it was a time for us to observe
and
listen.
Absorb.
Absorb and learn to be patient and learn to truly understand the question and answer in such a way that it would edify the person.
And he, Mr. Hal Baird was the minister, Hal Baird Jr. He was a wonderful man, and we did St. Louis, Bloomington. St. Louis, Missouri, and Bloomington, Illinois are, just for everybody's distance knowledge, 175 miles away. And we would go, we would do two services every week. One in St. Louis, start off at 9:30, finish at 11:30, stay till about 12, and then get on the road again. Many of the brethren, the women in the church, had mercy on us and give us a lunch to take along. So we would drive up there. Sometimes we didn't get a lunch. We'd stop real quickly and have a salad at a diner or something and get the services just in time, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we would speak there for 2 hours and sometimes do a Bible study afterwards, and after sometimes even have a spokesman's club. Then we would have our dinner about 7 or 8 o'clock. And then at come 10 o'clock, we'd get in the, going and drive all the way back. And I usually did the driving back of about 3 hours to get back home every week. That was what we did. But I learned so much from watching this man, because I saw his kindness, his gentleness. I saw his faithfulness to the scriptures, and I saw him tear up at people's situations.
Yeah.
And it made me aware of the kindness and care that he had. I tried to learn that from him, from example that I saw. And I saw the kindness that he had toward people and how he treated them and how the people loved him. Because when we'd go to services from leaving St. Louis to go to Bloomington, they would come and hug. The little kids would come over and sit on our laps and hug us goodbye like they may never see us again. You're going 175 miles away. So we did that. I did that for almost a year. And then I was transferred to England.
Mm-hmm.
Brickett Wood, they needed leaders from the U.S. because they only had freshman students there unless they had some leaders, which they had sent over the previous year. So 62, 63, I went back. I didn't go back to Pasadena. I ended up going over to England.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished England that year. Then I met my wife.
Uh-huh.
She was a junior. I was a senior. We both were picked as replacements because
for
England to go over to be examples because they had picked one man that they didn't realize he'd already been graduating. He was graduating that year, so they needed a replacement for him. They picked one girl to go, but she was already getting married, so she couldn't go. So my wife was a substitute. I was a substitute, so we ended up being substitutes. So we went over to England. First, I didn't like it at all, didn't think I'd like it. It was a wonderful time, and I got to know my wife better we had our Feast of Tabernacles, a convention there in Hayling Island, and I had to take somebody out special on special days, and who am I going to take out but somebody I like being with? So I took my wife out. So I came back from doing that, and after I was working at letter answering department, so they had me doing that. And I was dating, took Barbara about 3 times during the feast, spent money on her, you know, dinner or whatever. So I got back and I get called in.
Uh-oh.
One evangelist, one pastor, and another pastor sitting looking at me and saying to me, "We understand you dated Barbara, you were dating Barbara Oakes at the feast." I said, "Yes." And they said, I said, "Yeah, I dated her 3 times. Well, I didn't think it was anything wrong. I was a senior, she was a junior. I thought that was okay." He said, "No, you should wait till the second semester to do that." You know, okay. So you shouldn't be dating her. I said, "Okay, so how often can I date her?" They said, "Once every 3 weeks."
Oh.
So once every 3 weeks, I had a long Sabbath date. We had to ride the bus into Brickett Wood. I mean, into London, where they met at London, not in Brickett Wood. It was a long ride, about an hour.
She
was my date. I sat at services with her. She was my date. I took her to dinner. She was my date. We went to a movie or went dancing. She was my date. And then we took the train home.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a long date all day Saturday. So it, as it turned out, then in February we were engaged. And then after Mr. Armstrong did our wedding in June of that year, June 30th. And then before that time, they said to me, you're going to be sent out into the field ministry. I worked in L.A. I've worked in, not as a pastor, but an assistant pastor in St. Louis and Bloomington. I worked as an assistant or associate pastor in New York, New Jersey, and helped start New England Church with Mr. Cole, Raymond Cole. Worked with him as his assistant and his trainee. And then I was noticing all these other men who graduated when I did, they were ordained at the feast that year. And I didn't know anything. We did work, and we mostly were doing a lot of office work to get things set up because Mr. Cole had just been transferred there. So I finally said to him, Mr. Cole, is there something wrong with me? I just want to know, do I need something I need to change? Because I notice, you know, there's a lot of other people with the same maybe not even as much training as I had, already being used in a greater way. Is there any reason, something wrong with me? And he said, no, it's me. I haven't been able to take you out. So then he determined to take me out visiting several times himself. And he saw how I operated and how he did and how he observed what I did and how I was with people. The next thing I know, in April that year, Mr. Armstrong came through and they had a meeting at his house, at his hotel room, and like a dinner in his hotel room catered. And they call my name and Guy Engelbart's name, and they ordain us to preaching elder, full minister in the church.
And what really strikes me is just the way you were trained, the way we were trained, by observing things that you can't teach in a class. You can't teach how to tear up. That's quite something. I had a mentor, too. Every Tuesday afternoon, he had an evaluation of me. So he had, on a piece of cardboard, he wrote down all the things that I didn't do right. You know?
I'll tell you, I value that because the opportunity to see somebody in action, someone who'd been serving of God for so many years ahead of me, I was able to learn a lot. And I think that's something our ministers really need, because you can get practical, you get theoretical knowledge, but it's not the same as getting the practical by seeing how people do in action. And while circumstances may not be exactly the same, you learn principles of how to teach people and how to work with them.
Well, the Apostle Paul was an amazing person, that he was a very smart individual. You know, he was very learned. In fact, about the person with probably the highest degree of any of the apostles. And yet there was a side to him that he treated people with absolute passion. He cared for them, and he watched out for them, and he prayed for them, and they were worth everything to him. And perhaps, you know, just telling these stories should be an inspiration to those who are listening that are wondering what the ministry is about and what does it take. Maybe you could tell us some of the qualities beyond 1 Timothy 3, you know, which list this, and this. But talking about empathy, really love towards people.
When you love people, you go out of your way to help them. And I know I never tried to show anything. I never tried to be a showboat. I didn't try to show off. But I'll tell you, I loved being with people. I enjoyed them. And I told the men who work for me, and I tell some of the trainees who go out now, you don't have to speak. You don't have to sing your own praises. If you go out and you do the work and you're a servant of people, they will notice. And one of the deacons in Toronto told me, as I visited him and his wife, he said, Mr. Antion, we know who among the ministry here, because I had several men working at that time in that area, we know who cares. We know who does the work. Because they know what you're doing. They see you going. They see you doing Bible studies. They see you visiting. They know you care. And when you show up at the hospital, you know, in the wee hours of the morning, here when I at ABC, there was a young lady who ended up being in the hospital at 1 o'clock in the morning. They called me. I went down to the hospital. I was there. She had some of her ABC friends who were there with her. She had some type of an episode. And I was there. And, you know, her family thanked me years later.
Yeah.
for doing that. And I didn't do it for any glory for me. I did it because of the care that God's Spirit gives me to give to others.
And that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, the Holy Spirit leads you to care. Mm-hmm. And if you care, you show it. Mm-hmm. You don't just feel it in your being, you show it too.
Then as you progressed from being more of a, like working for someone, your first pastorate, what did you learn?
Well, I learned a lot of good organization from Raymond Cole. Raymond Cole was what I would call super organized. When I moved to Toronto, Canada, he was the one who went up with me to start the church up there in Toronto. We didn't have a church in Buffalo yet, though I lived in Buffalo. We started a church in Buffalo, too. The church in Toronto started 218. The church in Buffalo started with 143. Can you imagine? We only expected fewer than 100. So they had to jam 143 people into this very small room. And it would never fly in COVID days as we're in. But we had 143 people at Buffalo. So I had Buffalo and Toronto churches. I learned a lot there. I had that church, had that circuit for 4 years, and then I was asked to move to Canada, and I learned from Art McCarrow, who was over the Detroit area, I learned functional organization,
mm-hmm.
not supra organization, but functional. And I appreciated both of them so much because they taught me how to organize things. So I could organize 15,000 person feast. Mm-hmm. I could organize how to run this, how to do that, because I learned from them. And of course, I learned from Ambassador College too, and the beautiful surroundings we had and how things were kept neatly and with good decorum.
Gary, I would say that you have been one of the most influential people in my life. And I'm not just saying that because we're doing the podcast, but during some very difficult days when I was just at my wit's end, you know, with discouragement, and you could have easily just walked away. You said, I know how you feel. And I know you just didn't say it, that you're discouraged. You know, you just absolutely say these things back. And you certainly were a person that was very, very instrumental in my surviving some of the tough times that we've had.
Thank you. We both shared the Council of Elders mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. We both shared some of the ups and downs at the starting of United. And I value you. I've always appreciated the fact that you had a servant's heart and that your attitude was, how can I help people? That I've always appreciated. Mm-hmm. And that's where we kind of connect. I like helping people too.
Mm-hmm.
But you have that, and you just don't think about it. You did it. You did something with Life Nets. You did something so you could help people in a legitimate way overseas. And that has helped thousands and thousands of people. I always read the scripture in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 57. Whatever you do for the Lord, or 58, it'll never be bypassed. Whatever you do, if you do it for God, if you do it to His people, it'll never be forgotten, and God will remember that. And so I always think of that when I do things that, you know, people may not know, people may not even be grateful,
mm-hmm.
but eventually, you know, God will reward.
It makes an impact on them or their children or somebody. I've had people, like you said, after 25 years, they come back and remember a kindness.
There you go.
And they show it in some way. Gary, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
It's just been wonderful talking to you on these podcasts, and we'll have more of them because I just want to talk to you about some of the other things that you've had experience in, and we just can't talk about it all at the same time. So we'll save that for another podcast. So I want to thank you very much again for joining us on Inside United today. Please be sure to tell your friends about this podcast. You can find us on the ucg.org website. Go to the main menu bar and click on the podcast button. That's where they're all located. You can also find us on Spotify, and you can also find us through your favorite Apple or Android app. And be sure to write to us at podcast@ucg.org. podcast@ucg.org. So thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you, and come again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.